The downpour became heavy, but the roof had been packed tightly, and no water dripped down through it. Some water did, however, come under the back wall, which was uphill. It spread out over the floor, but did not wet them, since the grass and leaves under them formed a mat about 10 inches thick. Ferton talked with Monat until the rain ceased, approximately half an hour later. Monat fell asleep. Kaz had never awakened. Ferton tried to get back to sleep, but couldn't. He had never felt so alone, and he was afraid that he might slip back into the nightmare. After a while, he left the hut and walked to the one which Wilfrida had chosen. He smelled the tobacco before he got to the doorway. The tip of her cigarette glowed in the dark. She was a dim figure sitting upright in the pile of grass and leaves. "Hello," she said. "I was hoping you would come." "It's the instinct to own property," Ferton said. "I doubt that it's an instinct in man," Frigate said. "Some people in the 60s, 1960s, that is, tried to demonstrate that man had an instinct which they called the territorial imperative, but I like that phrase. It has a fine ring to it," Ferton said. "I knew you'd like it," Frigate said. "But Ardrey and others try to prove that man not only had an instinct to claim a certain area of land as his own, he also was descended from a killer ape, and the instinct to kill was still strong in his heritage from the killer ape, which explained national boundaries, patriotism, both national and local, capitalism, war, murder, crime, and so forth. But the other school of thought, or of the temperamental inclination, maintained that all these are the results of culture, of the cultural continuity of societies dedicated from earliest times to tribal hostilities, to war, to murder, to crime, and so forth. Change the culture, and the killer ape is missing. Missing because he was never there. Like the little man on the stairs. The killer was the society, and society bred the new killers out of every batch of babies. But there were some societies composed of pre-literates, it's true, but still societies that didn't breed killers. And they were proof that man was not descended from a killer ape. Or I should say he was perhaps descended from the ape, but he didn't carry the killing genes any longer, any more than he carried the genes for a heavy supraorbital ridge or hairy skin, or thick bones, or a skull with only 650 cubic centimeters capacity." "That's all very interesting," Burton said. "We'll go into the theory more deeply at another time. Let me point out to you, however, that almost every member of resurrected humanity comes from a culture which encouraged war and murder and crime and rape and robbery and madness. It is these people among whom we are living and with whom we have to deal. There may be a new generation some day, I don't know, it's too early to say since we've only been here for 7 days. But like it or not, we are in a world populated by beings who quite often act as if they were killer apes. In the meantime, let's get back to our model." They were sitting on bamboo stools before Burton's hut. On a little bamboo table in front of them was a model of a boat made from pine and bamboo. It had a double hull across the top of which was a platform with a low railing in the center. It had a single mast, very tall, with a fore and aft rig, a balloon jib sail, and a slightly raised bridge with a wheel. Burton and Frigate had used chert knives and the edge of the scissors to carve the model of the catamaran. Burton had decided to name the boat when it was built the Hadji. It would be going on a pilgrimage, though its goal was not Mecca. He intended to sail it up the river as far as it would go. By now, the river had become the river. The two had been talking about the territorial imperative because of some anticipated difficulties in getting the boat built. By now, the people in this area were somewhat settled. They had staked out their property and constructed their dwellings or were still working on them. These ranged all the way from lean-tos to relatively grandiose buildings that would be made of bamboo logs and stone, have 4 rooms and be 2 stories high. Most of them were near the grail stones along the river and at the base of the mountain. Burton's survey completed 2 days before resulted in an estimate of about 260 to 261 people per square mile. For every square mile of flat plain on each side of the river, there were approximately 2.4 square miles of hills. But the hills were so high and irregular that their actual inhabitable area was about 9 square miles. In the 3 areas that he had studied, he found that about one-third had built their dwellings close to the riverside Grailstones and one-third around the inland Grailstones. 261 persons per square mile seemed like a heavy population, but the hills were so heavily wooded and convoluted in topography that a small group living there could feel isolated, and the plain was seldom crowded except at mealtimes, because the plains people were in the woods or fishing along the edge of the river. Many were working on dugouts or bamboo boats with the idea of fishing in the middle of the river, or, like Burton, of going exploring.